Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Stellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to have some really powerful conversations that will empower you with the knowledge so you can make truly informed decisions in your life. And as always, it's just great to have you join me today. I do want to let people know, because we are coming up to the holiday season, I love the holidays because it's a time when we can open our hearts and express our generosity and feel so good by giving to others. So this is what I would like to do to support my community at this time. I am actually going to be offering everything that I do, all my services, all my testing, my genomic testing, my personal consultations, the various other programs I have, my weight loss programs, all the products, all the very special products that I have in my online store at What Women Must Know for 20% off. So this is just my little way of thanking everyone and doing my best to support you so you can truly create the healthy, fabulous, vital life that you deserve. So have a look at What Women Must Know, and if it calls to you, please take advantage of my expression, my gift to you this time of the year. And we have another gift for you on this show today. We have the gift of Dr. Bernie Siegel. I just love the opportunity to interview Bernie. He is such an inspiration in my life. Many of you may know of him. He needs little introduction, but I will just give you a little brief bio about Dr. Siegel for those who haven't had the privilege of meeting him before. He is a well-known proponent of integrative and holistic approaches to healing that heal not just the body, but also the mind and soul. A retired surgeon and a lover of animals, Bernie has been in the forefront of spiritual and medical ethic issues of our day and has been named one of the top 20 spiritually influential living people by Watkins Mind, Body, Spirit magazine out of London. Bernie and his wife, Bobby, live in a suburb of New Haven, Connecticut. They have 5 children, 8 grandchildren, 4 cats, 2 dogs, and much love. And we're going to be exploring Bernie's latest book, Love, Animals, and Miracles, Inspiring True Stories Celebrating the Healing Bond. So if you're an animal lover, or maybe not, but you will be after today, it's great to have you join me for a wonderful conversation today with Dr. Bernie Siegel. So first of all, let me welcome you, Bernie, to the show today.
Thank you. You have to give me permission to talk to the women who are listening. Because you know, what women must know. Because really, what I saw as I began to do this, first of all, that women, I wish they were in charge of the world, and I'm not kidding. But when I sent out letters to 100 people saying, you want to live a longer, better life, only 12 women showed up. And when men did, it's changed a lot now. And you'd said, why are you here? I'm her chauffeur. And the whole room would burst out laughing. And the men would say, what are you laughing about? Your answer. There's nothing to do. You didn't say, I love my wife. I care about her. I'm her chauffeur. And I've had men in my office say, there's no point in living. I can't work anymore. With their wife and children sitting right beside them. Now, on the other hand, women will say, which is good, but not complete, I can't die. I said, why not? I have 9 children. I can't die till they're all married and out of the house. She died 20 years later when the last kid left home. And as a doctor, that blew my mind. How do you keep cancer from acting up for 20 years? You see, but it's some of the things I now try to teach people. And I would say to women, be your own child too, if you know what I mean. Don't live just for others. I ask people to draw pictures too. And one woman drew herself split down the middle, the mommy and the professional. And who's the happy one? The mommy. Well, then go home. You know, don't wait for the doctor to tell you you have 2 months to live to say, then I think I'll not go to work anymore. And what you see is a lot of people do go home and then don't die. I have one letter from a woman that ended with, I didn't die, now I'm so busy I'm killing myself. Help, where do I go from here? Because she was doing what she loved. And I say to the women, pay attention to your heart. And some humor, too, I have to add. A woman who was in business with her husband in real estate, and she was quite a salesman. He was thrilled with her. But he was never happy with how she dressed and the meals she made. And, you know, these are women sitting there talking about this when they have cancer. And so I said to her, well, this is what I want you to do. Tonight, when your husband comes home, he will find you naked and no meal ready. And she said, what? I said, look, when he comes in and says, why are you don't have any clothes on. There's no supper in the kitchen. Yes, I never know what to wear, and I don't know how to make dinner properly. And maybe he'll get the message. And I loved one woman who said, I learned that I have cancer, and I'm going to get a divorce. I'm going to give up a tit and an ass. And last but not least, another woman in our support group said, I don't know what to do. I said, what is it? You know, I have cancer. I'm going to get a divorce. The lawyer is asking me if I want a lump sum payment or monthly payments. I said, there's no question, monthly. She said, why do you say that? I said, because if you're getting monthly payments, you're not going to die. You want to screw your husband, you keep living for years. And she is smiling and doing that today. So I'd say to the women, and last story, please empower yourselves. My wife and I, and I love introducing her in this way. Here's a woman I've had 40 wonderful years of married life with. And all the women in the audience smile. And then I say, 40 out of 61 isn't too bad. Then they want to kill me. But, you see, she and I would get on the stage. She did one-liners, which made the women happy, if you know what I mean. It had more humor related to women over men. So by the time she was done, they were all laughing, smiling, and liked what she had to say more than 2 hours of my lecturing. But after one lecture down south, when we were done, a lot of women seemed hostile and angry. And I said to the woman who invited me, because this was for a woman's group, I mean, we had hundreds of women in the audience, she said, it's your marriage. They're jealous. I said, what are you talking about? They're jealous. She said, your wife can interrupt you. You don't get upset. You listen to her. Your wife is on the stage with you. They're submissive. They have lost track of what is politeness, and they have become submissive. And so they're jealous of what your wife is able to do and say. And that impressed me. It taught me a lot. And so I'd say again to all the women, which would get me back to the animals, you know, it's okay to growl. See, one of the stories I tell, we have a fenced-in yard and five kids and a house full of creatures. So one day, I noticed the kids aren't going out anymore. I said, what's the matter? And they said, well, there's a snake in the front yard, and it hisses at us, and we're afraid it's going to bite us. I said, I'll go talk to the snake, because I've learned from animal intuitives. Quiet your mind, you communicate with animals. Those are some that are in there, stories that are in there. And I went out, and I talked to the snake, and the snake said, okay, I won't bite your kids. They don't have to be afraid. So the kids are out playing the next few weeks, no problem. And I said, any trouble with the snake? No. I said, I'm going to go out and thank it. And I went out, and the snake was all bruised and practically tied in a knot. I said, what's happened to you? Your kids. I said, what do you mean, my kids? What'd they do? Well, they know I'm not going to bite them, so they're fooling around with me, tossing me around, playing games, and I'm all bruised. I said, I didn't tell you not to hiss. I said, don't bite. And I'd say, remember that. There's appropriate anger. When you're not treated with respect, it's okay to speak up. You know, that...
Is that a true story, Bernie?
Oh, I never make up anything. It's always true.
That just sounds
and
so
I will,
amazing.
For the women, leave you some words of advice from my wife. Because if your husband gets angry, try this one. Because she has done all these things with me. Oh, you're so handsome when you're angry. Oh, I melt and I smile. And if that doesn't work, honey, you're upsetting the pets. You know. So again, you know, the laughter, the humor, she is so good at that. And if you have to see a doctor or go anywhere, I get such a kick out of her because, I mean, she, you know, somebody will come in the room. Yeah, she needed surgery for breast cancer many years ago. And I know the anesthesiologist. I'm a surgeon. You know, he's coming in trying to look very efficient, please me, make me happy. And he walks in and sits down, and my wife says, "You are quite a handsome man." Well, the guy melts. And the next thing I know, surgery is delayed because they're having a date. You know, they're talking there in the hospital about you're handsome, you know. And that's the part I love because she turns them into people. I learned to do that in the office too with patients, you know, to get through on a human level. And my wife is so good at that. I felt like saying we were at one outdoor clinic for something that came up, and everybody who came in the room, "You're so pretty, you're so handsome, you're so pretty." At the end of the session, when we were going to go home after that visit, I felt like saying to everybody, "Don't you think we ought to have our eyes checked?" you know, but it makes everybody feel good and be so comfortable with her. And she's lived with lots of problems for years, and I have to say, yeah, and I love her too. We've learned together, I mean, to literally grow together and at the same time realize that when we're worn out and tired, that's when it's more likely for us to get sick. And I began to realize the same was true of my patients. I mean, because amongst our five children are twins, so we had our hands full because they were all born within a few years of each other. It's my fault. Well, again, her sense of humor. I promise I'll stop after this one. We had three sons, and I said to my wife, "I really want a daughter, so we'll have somebody help take care of us when we get older." And so she said, "All right, I'll try one more time." And then, and in these days, we didn't have all the scans and things. So shortly before she was due, like a few weeks before she was due, the obstetrician said to her, he took an X-ray and said, "You're going to have twins." And my wife turned to me and said, "If it's two more boys, I am not coming home from the hospital." Thank God the first one out was a girl. The second one was a boy.
So, you know, on this vein, I really would like you to share your thoughts to all the women listening. It's true for men, too. But when I work with women and they come in with their physical issues, whatever,
right,
we get so focused on the physical side. But, you know, how our physical manifests is the result of the thoughts we've been holding,
right,
the emotions we've been dealing with. Can you just help us get, you know, really understand that we,
yeah,
are this expression of a physical, emotional, mental, spiritual being, and all aspects have to be addressed and understood.
Yeah, if you haven't been brought up with love, that's a big part of it, you see. And that's part of why I tell parents, you know, have pets in the house. Teach your children to have a reverence for life, all life.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes themselves. But to let them know they are loved. And my comment is, it doesn't mean you have to like everything that they do. But to be able to speak with love and have a sense of humor and, you know, get that across to them and learn from them. Because when children grow up with love, they take care of themselves. They're not self-destructive. You know, they're not addicted to alcohol, drugs, tobacco, and all these things. Because they don't need those things. They care about themselves. They know it's not appropriate to do that. And I'd say that's the first thing. And the hard part is if you haven't been loved by your parents, then your children will go through the same thing. I mean, this is a quote from a woman. "I must have been a failure as a child. My parents committed suicide."
Hmm.
Now, why did I learn that? Because I said to her, "How would you describe your experience of cancer?" She said, "Failure." So I said, "How does failure fit your life?" Then she said, "I must have been a failure." So when people are having problems, ask yourself, how would I describe, what words would I use to describe what I'm going through? Now, relating to relationships, and again, these are true stories. A woman was about to be admitted to the hospital. She'd had a couple of weeks of migraine headaches and in severe pain. And I happened to be present because I was visiting with a neurologist whose office she was in. So the nurse said, "Please keep your voices down. We're waiting for her to get transportation to the hospital. So I went in to try to help her with her pain. And I asked her what the pain felt like. She said, it's pressure. She's not my patient, see? So I didn't say, what's the pressure in your life?
Mm-hmm.
What I did was just talk to her about pressure, and we did a relaxation, guided imagery, how do you relieve pressure, and so forth. And then I left her, and she was feeling a little better. And 15 minutes later, the nurse came in and said, she's not going to the hospital, she's going home, her headache's gone, it's her marriage. Boom. Mm-hmm. See?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say to you, whether it's emotional, physical, whatever you're going through, ask yourself, how would I describe this to other people? Now, if you said, oh, it's a wake-up call, it's a gift, it's a new beginning, fine. Then you're on that course already. You know, you're learning from your trouble. I always mm-hmm. say the way hunger makes you seek nourishment, you have used that uncomfortable feeling to go find something and to improve your life and nourish yourself. But when you come up with all the negative words, you know, failure, roadblock, draining, pressure, knife, then my comment is, what else in your life fits those words? And all that stuff is stored in you, believe me, because I also do a lot of work with drawings. And when a reporter comes in, who I could tell was very intellectual and not happy about having to interview me, I said to her, draw a picture before you come in. And she handed me a picture, and this is in one of my books called The Art of Healing, and there's a clock on the wall behind her with one hand pointed at 12. So to get through to her, I didn't say, why is 12 important in your life? I just said, what happened when you were 12 years old? And then she bursts out crying and tells me about the sexual abuse. Another woman who was unresponsive to all kinds of treatment from many doctors for pelvic problems. I said to this doctor, who's a friend of mine, he was talking to me about her, I said, tell her to draw a picture. And she drew a broken heart with 21 drops of blood. I said, ask her what happened when she was 21. And she'd been abused. It was a horror, just reading the email that her doctor sent me, what she went through that year in her life. So people have to understand all these things are stored in us. What do the children teach us? What do the animals teach us? Hey, let's have a nice day. Let's stop worrying about the future. And, you know, resenting the past. Let's let go and have that nice day. And I say that, well, one of the stories in the book is a true one. I won't go into all the details, but I didn't separate one of our dogs from a rabbit that we brought into the house as a pet. It was in the woods, escaped from somebody's house. We trapped it and brought it in, and it becomes a house rabbit, literally. And after about 10 days, I thought they knew each other and forgot to close the pet door to keep the rabbit in the front and the dog in the house. So I come home, and the rabbit was wounded by the dog. And I felt, oh, so terrible and guilty. But how am I going to deal with it? Well, we take care of the rabbit, take it to the vet. I'm caring for her wounds. And the other thing that she taught me was when I would hurt her, how would I know I was hurting her? She would lick my hand. That breaks your heart, you know? She doesn't bite my finger and say, hey, that hurts what you're doing to my wound. She would lick my hand, and then I would rest for a few minutes and stop and let her settle down. But a few weeks after the injury, I would always go out at dusk to bring her in because I worried if some predator jumped the fence that she would be vulnerable, whereas all the cats and dogs could handle themselves. And so I would go out and call her name, and of course she'd run around the yard and drive me nuts because she doesn't want to come in. But one evening, I couldn't find her in the front yard. And where was she? Because I went over to pet our dog, Furphy, who had bitten her. She was hiding behind Furphy, literally lying against his back so I couldn't see her. And that was her way and his way of helping her to stay out at night. And I thought, look at this. The two of them are friends. She's already forgiven him. They don't have a problem with each other. And that and another little one by one of our grandchildren, Charlie. He had a turtle who, as it grew up, the veterinarian said the personality changes. So he was depressed being alone and in the tank and not eating. And he said to Charlie, you got to stimulate his appetite. Get him a little fish and drop it in the tank where he's living. And that broke Charlie's heart. Oh, this poor fish will end up dying now. And, you know, because he had a reverence for all creatures. But he went and bought a little fish and he dropped it in the tank. And then what happened was so wonderful. The turtle and the fish swam up to each other, touched noses, and became friends. And they're living together, eating meals together, and enjoying life and friendship. And that's why I say the animals are complete. You know, when I talk about all the things about people, we are not complete. It makes our actions meaningful, but it also makes it a lot tougher. And the animals are complete, and they have a lot to teach us. And I may add, with a relationship, that those who have pets in their house live longer after a heart attack or an illness than those who don't. And doctors have done studies on these things and looked into, you know, when there was a dog in the house, what was the survival rate, and when there was no dog in the house. So petting a furry creature also leads to changes in your chemistry. Your bonding hormones go up, the same as when a woman gives birth. And I always say to women, if you're looking for a husband, get a dog first and take it for a walk, because you're more likely to have guys talk to you than if you're walking alone. And one more about bonding. All our pets were hatched in incubators. And this ranged from turtles to ducks and geese. We would take the eggs, bring them in, put them in an incubator. So they all imprinted upon our children, because when they hatched, what'd they see? Our kids standing around. So that must be our parents. And the ducks and geese, it was funny, and because they would try to get on the school bus every morning with our kids. They would follow them down the driveway and literally try to jump on the bus. I mean, the drivers got a kick out of it and, you know, didn't get upset. And then they would be waiting for the kids when they got home in the afternoon. Well, after a while, you had so many, you can't keep them around your house, because they were all fenced in and made little ponds that rainwater would fill. And so I took a bunch of them down to where my folks lived on a lake and let them all go. And then a few days later, the phone rings, my mother. We have a question from all our neighbors. What is it? Every time a school bus pulls up, all the ducks and geese come out of the lake and up to the road. That touched my heart, too. You know, that they were looking for their friends, for their parents, for their buddies. And, and that's what the animals are like, you know, and they're teaching us about the relationships and to enjoy the day and stop worrying how you look when you look in the mirror, you know, to quiet your mind and see the truth and the beauty.
So we do develop these amazing relationships with our animals, and they are a place where we can give and receive unconditional love. You know, are there any other studies, Bernie, other indications of the power of healing that exists when we interact with another species?
I think when it's a loving interaction, I mean, you hear stories from nursing homes and even hospitals that some of them are bringing animals in. But I know, as a personal example, we had a cat named Miracle. And we gave her that name when one of our kids brought her in from some garage where they had found her as a kitten. And why did I give her that name? Because a woman told me she had a dream, you know, a few nights before. And in the dream, a cat named Miracle appears and told her how to treat her cancer. And she's alive and well today, having followed the cat's directions. At least her doctor was, thank God, you know, didn't say, lady, you're crazy, I'll decide. He said, okay, we'll follow what the cat told her. And Miracle, I used to take her everywhere, and I mean that literally, from the time she was a kitten. So she had no fears of people, noise. I mean, you could take her through a car wash, and she would sit quietly on my shoulder And I mean it, on the shoulder. People would look and say, what's that cat doing on your shoulder? I said, well, you know, I'm walking around. She just sits there. And if I did walk, she was like a dog. I could call her and she'd come to me. But now I forgot where I was going about miracle. What was your question again?
We were just talking about, what's miracle about
the health.
Relationship.
Yeah, the health aspect. Because if I got into bed not feeling well, it was amazing. She would be up on my chest purring and really healing me. It would feel so good. But I noticed if I went, like, for a nap in the afternoon, she didn't come in to sit on my chest. Because she knew he doesn't need me. He's not sick now. But when I was not well, she was there. And another was a gentleman who told me that his dad was quite ill at home, and he couldn't get his father's dog to get out of the bedroom. I mean, he would drag him out a couple of times, you know, to pee and poop in the yard. But he said, I couldn't get him out otherwise. I had to feed him in the bedroom. And then he said, I came home one evening, and here's the dog sitting in the kitchen waiting for dinner. And he said, I knew my father was getting better at that time. Mm-hmm. He went in the bedroom, and sure enough, Dad is feeling better. So again, the animals intuitively know, just as we're capable of intuitively knowing. I mean, patients who said that their doctors were compassionate got over the flu faster than patients who said, my doctor wasn't compassionate, doesn't listen, doesn't answer my questions. So it, again, is a relationship, whether it's a dog or a person or a cat or a fish. It's when you have that connection, and I mean it literally, when you feel some responsibility, because these have been tests that have been done, I shouldn't use the word test, but, you know, but studies that have been done in nursing homes where you put a plant, say, or a pet in a tank, you know, in the person's room, and say, you have to take care of the plant, you have to take care of this fish. Across the hall, you say, we're decorating your room. We'll take care of the plant. We'll take care of the fish. Guess who lived longer in that study? The people who had a relationship and responsibility lived 3 to 4 years longer than the people across the hall. And that's, again, I mean, simple studies of people who lived to be 100. They were active, and didn't mean they belonged to a gym, but they were active. They ate reasonably healthy. They had a purpose in their life, and they had relationships, what was called a clan, you know, a group that they felt close to. Those are not magical statements, you know. They're simple things that we could all do. And then we enhance our health and more likely to survive.
So let's take a break at this point. And when we come back, Bernie, I'd like you to talk about a couple of things. I'd like you to talk about how these beings choose us and that special relationship that often arrives. And I also want you to talk about when animals die. And how we can work with that, the gifts from that process of life's experience, because I know it brings up so much grief.
Oh, very good, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So meanwhile, let's just use this to take a break. We're going to be back in a minute. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and today we are having this wonderful conversation with Dr. Bernie Siegel about his new book, Love, Animals, and Miracles, Inspiring True Stories Celebrating the Healing Bond. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food. And you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
This is Bobby Elias.
And it's Dr. Sarah Larson.
Hosts of Let's Create a Better World. Our show is for your body, mind, and soul to have the latest, greatest cultural, creative information available.
Join us with our expert guests every Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific.
You can also hear our show on the phone at 619 550-0869.
And don't forget about the archives.
We're moving forward on PRN.FM.
And we want you to come with us.
Saturdays, don't forget, every Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific. Let's create a better world.
Gary Knoll's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Knoll. Thank you for your continued support.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Earl Stellman, welcome back to What Women Must Know. And to my guest today, Dr. Bernie Siegel, who has a wonderful new book, Love, Animals, and Miracles, Inspiring True Stories Celebrating the Healing Bond. So, Bernie, we're talking about how animals come into our life, because often there's such a destiny of how we are chosen by our pets. And I know you've got some great stories in your book that demonstrate this.
Yeah, I mean, and this doesn't mean I'm psychotic. I hear voices. And I always leave it to God to tell me when to go to the animal shelter. That may sound crazy.
No.
It's okay if people want to think I'm crazy, but I mean it. And it's so unique who's there. I mean, over the last year, I mean, two of our dogs have died, so I have gone down when I've gotten the voice and picked up others. But the first one, I mentioned the name Furphy, I was at the shelter, and he came running up and grabbed my leg. Now, they're not supposed to have loose animals there. They're all caged. What's he doing? Why does he grab my leg? But when he does that, yeah, I bring him home. And how did he get the name Furphy? My wife said, we have enough pets in the house. I don't need little pieces of fur. Furphy's all over the house. I don't want another dog. But I said, no, his name is Furphy. And she laughed, and he became our child. Then what was even more interesting, because we'll use the content of this book on our next topic that you mentioned about loss. I wrote a book about a child and his dog that have cancer. And, of course, the dog is the teacher for the family. And it's called Buddy's Candle. Well, I finished the book. I decide I'll take a walk. And I got Furphy, and we went out in the yard. And I hear a voice say to me, go to the animal shelter. I turned around, went back, got in the car with Furphy, and drove down to the shelter and went in. I walk in, there's a dog sitting right by the door, and out of my mouth, without even thinking, I said, what's his name? They said, his name is Buddy. He has been here less than 15 minutes, and the people didn't like his behavior. I said, I'm taking him home. I never questioned anything, and I just packed him up, took him home. Now, what's the fascinating part? On the way home, I stopped for gas, and he jumped out of the car. While I was opening my door to get out to pump the gas, he jumped out and started running down the street. And we had a hell of a time catching him because, you know, again, he doesn't know me. So everybody was stopping their cars, and we finally got him and put him back in the car. When I got home, I quieted my mind, which I've learned from my friend Amelia Kincaid, who has stories in there too, who's an animal intuitive and has told me where to find lost pets in Connecticut while she's been in California and Africa. And I ain't kidding. So taught me what I thought was nuts. You know, you talk to animals. Yeah, it's real. So when we got home, I stood there with Buddy and I said, in my head, why did you act this way? And he said, I belong to a couple. The husband was an alcoholic. When he would come home from work, the wife would say, take the dog for a walk. He never took me for a walk. He would go to the bar and drink and leave me locked in the car and then abused me. And I said, I would never treat you that way. You don't have to worry. But I know how true that story was from the way he behaved when we'd bring him in. In other words, if I picked up a broom to sweep up, he would cringe like I'm going to be beaten with a stick. And even in the kitchen, you know, the dog smell what you're eating. They want to come in and have some. And I'd say, oh, come here. And he'd back up. Come here. And he backs up. But he was so filled with fear. Well, I can tell you, of course, as the years went by, he learned I was a good guy. And there was a time I went into Stop and Shop and accidentally hit the button on the keys. And so the side door of the car was open, the minivan. And I came back to the car. I saw the open. I thought, oh, my God, he's gone. No, he was sitting in an open car. Mm-hmm. That impressed me. See? He knows he's safe. And the other dog, Furphy, I knew where he was. He was in Stop and Shop looking for me. And the security guard said, this is your dog? I said, yeah. And so, you know, I took him back to the car. But again, you know, what they taught us and that message. And recently, I went down there after the other two had died. Furphy and Buddy had died this year. And I might add, I bury everybody around the house. We have memorials to all the cats and dogs and rabbits and everybody. But I went down to the shelter and I walked in, and there was a new dog there. They got that morning, see? And I got my message, go to the shelter. And what do I see? His name is Brady. And I had a child in an Irish family named after me, but they named him Brady because of things I had done for the family to honor me. But, you know, they wanted an Irish name. So when I saw this dog's name was Brady, I immediately said, oh, I'm taking him home. It was this beautiful big husky that I fell in love with. But at home, I have to also add that he was so full of energy and running all over that he just, you know, made everybody nervous that he's going to knock me over. It wasn't that he was threatening anybody, just full of love and energy. So I decided, all right, I'll take him back. We'll find him another home. And when I go down to bring him back, there was this little guy sitting there looking at me. I said, I'll take him home. He didn't even have a name. And I named him Rags after a poem by Vincent Everett Cook, in which a dog who has saved the lives of soldiers. At the time of discharge, this one soldier wants to take him home but can't find him. And when he goes back to medical school, and this is why it broke my heart, who does he find cut open in the laboratory? The dog who saved his life. And what does the dog do before he dies? He licks his hand because he goes over to him. And he said it was Rags. And he licked my hand and died. And if there's no place in heaven for a creature like that, then I'd rather be in hell. And that's the part, you know. So I named him Rags, and now I have my Rags to honor that poem and all the animals.
So Brady wasn't the dog you were meant to be with.
Yeah, I would have kept him and trained him, but he was so clever and smart. I mean, I got such a kick out of him because if I put him in the front yard and we just have these small pet doors that cats can go in and out of, you know, and I thought, well, that'll separate him. But I watched him squeeze through this little pet door. And I was impressed with what he did, you know. But
he was a contortionist.
You know, my wife
was
afraid. Well, I brought one dog home. My wife just named him Bruiser because he was knocking everybody over. You know, he'd run around you, and your legs would be tied together with the leash. And so we found him a home on a farm. And it may say Brady is now living, you know, in the nearby town. I've had... my father's name is Simon. See, they learn. I always tell people now, don't let them know the names of your family. Because I go into the shelter, say, oh, what's that little dog's name? Simon. That's my father's name. I'll take him home. We had a cat in the house now named Simon. Because you walk in, there's a little kitten. What's his name? Simon. Oh, they know I'm going to take him home. So I don't not ask anymore what's anybody's name. You know, I just go and connect. But I have to say, this Rags is just incredible. He's such a gift in the house. He's just loving and sweet and good with
So what does he look like? What kind of dog is he?
Oh, he's a little bit of a Cocker Spaniel and probably either a poodle or a Bichon. He's just got a tail that is like a flag, you know, waving, and he's white. And I always bathe everybody in the shower with me, and he's just... you know, a sweet person. I may add, lying next to me right now is Princess, That's a little black and white kitten that we have, or cat. And she's the tiniest thing. See, but that's what's interesting. How the animals, I mean, the two biggest ones we have are males, named Rusty and Simon. And they more often hide when somebody's working in the house or another dog comes in or something else. And these little females, we have Hope and Princess, will go up to strangers and people working and making noise or the, you know, big dog. And they go up and, hey, how are you? How are you doing?
They want to make them comfortable, offer them a cup of tea.
Yeah, I guess that's your kick out of. You know, you'd think this great big cat who weighs as much as the dog would not be afraid. And they're the ones who go and hide all day, and you have to feed them under, you know, some piece of furniture.
Let's talk about when animals die. What are your words of comfort, inspiration to people when their beloved animals?
I'd say two things. What dies is the body, not their consciousness, that they're with us. That may sound crazy, but I still, like when I want to call Rags, I'll say, hey, buddy, come over here. Rags. I mean, you know, it's not that my brain is damaged. Why do I keep saying that? My sense is that they're really here with us, and that some of the qualities in Rags are things that the other dogs did. Like Furphy would always roll over because he wanted his stomach rubbed, and he'd swing his front paws saying, more, more, more. And who rolls over to want his tummy rubbed? Rags. Now, Buddy never did that, but it's a feeling like their spirit is there and still saying hello to you, and it can be from people, too. Just look for signs, is what I say, that they're still around, and so they're still in my memory. Yes, I've lived with lots of loss from family and you know, people in our support group and so forth, and I've learned, in a sense, that death is not the worst outcome. When you leave your body, you're perfect again. And I mean that literally. You will not feel, well, let's put it this way. People born blind when they had a near-death experience could see. So all those qualities stay with us, but our body doesn't. Mm-hmm. But the message from my book, Buddy's Candle, that I felt helped me many years ago to get that message when my father died, that I was going to wear black, say, for the rest of my life, so that it would remind me I'm mortal and to enjoy the day. But think about it. I mean, are you going to get dressed in black every day and not make your day more joyful? And then the angel of death showed up. Okay? And the angel said to me, Bernie, your father died a few weeks ago. You're wearing black. I want to take you up to the parade that's happening in heaven at the end of the month for all the fathers who died this month. Now, he could have said to me, all the dogs that died this month are going to have a parade. And we go up there, and I'm sitting, and all the fathers and dogs are walking by, looking beautiful, carrying a bright candle that's just glowing. And I said, gee, that's beautiful. But, oh, look, there's a man coming or a dog coming with a dark candle. Oh, said the angel, here's a match. Go light it for them. And I went up, and it was my dog, Buddy. And I said, Buddy, I came to light your candle. And he looked at me and he said, they do, but your tears keep putting it out. And that took the weight off my back. They let go of the black and enjoy your life. That's what my father wants for me. That's what my dog wants for me. Not to live with loss. But what I have learned to do is also honor them, as I said, with their grave. There's a story, and I thought was fiction, but then I came across the fact that it was a true story in which a knight returns to his home, knows his wife has given birth while he's away, and goes up to the nursery, and it's covered in blood, as is his dog who's sitting there. The crib is upside down. His first reaction is, the dog has killed my child, and he kills his dog. And then he picks up the crib, and there's a dead wolf, and his child is fine, lying there next to the wolf. Mm. They realize he killed the dog who saved his child's life. And he builds a cairn, a monument of stone for that dog. And that's what I built at the end of our driveway, a big pile of stone to honor them. But again, what came to me as a voice one morning, I was always looking for more stones to build a bigger monument. And one morning, I heard the dog say to me, "Why don't you bring me a flower, not a stone?" I mean it. I heard a voice, and it was such a lift of weight off my back to think, wow, thank you. So now every morning I'll look for something pretty, something beautiful, something colorful, not another stone. And that's the part, how they keep teaching us. And again, it may sound crazy to people to say I hear voices, but I hear them, and when I hear, I listen, because it's always directing me to do what will be meaningful. The day my father was going to die, now he decided that, see, he was tired of his body. That morning a voice said to me, "How did your parents meet?" I said, "I don't know. Ask your mother when you get to the hospital." I did. And she started telling stories, which included the fact that my father lost a coin toss and had to take my mother out. And my father died laughing because of the stories my mother told. It was such an incredible feeling. I mean, I'd say it was one of the nicest day of the family's life, you know, to be there, to watch my father laugh, go from a sick person to a healthy person. I mean, I really, as a doctor, thought he was going to say, "Hey, this is fun. I'm not going to die today. I'm sorry I dragged you all down here." But when did he take his last breath? When the last grandchild who could make it that day arrived. And how does he know who that is? That was the other part. We knew who was coming because we told everybody, "Grandpa's dying on Sunday." And we knew who was coming. When the last person we knew was coming came in, he took his last breath. So his consciousness was aware also. And he waited until everybody arrived. And then he took his breath, looking healthy, wonderful, with a big smile on his face. And the animals can do that too. Let them bring them home. One other story or two. One was one of our dogs named Oscar years ago who had cancer. And the vet said to me during his checkup, he said, "Bernie, this dog is so sick, he is not going to recover. I've never seen a dog this sick survive." He said, "Let's euthanize him while you're here." I said, "No, wait a minute. I got to tell the kids. I can't come home with a dead dog, and they're not expecting it." So I called home, and I never forget the answer from our kids. "No, you don't put your patients to sleep. You're not putting Oscar to sleep." So I brought him home, and we loved him. I shared my meals with him, sitting on the floor with him. And within 2 weeks, he was on his feet out the door and lived for over 3 years with no sign of cancer, which blew the vet's mind away. And I can also tell you of friends of mine who got a call from a vet, "Your cat is dying. We should euthanize it." "No, we'll come and bring it home and let it die at the in the house." They went to get their cat. The vet came out with this limp thing in its his hands. Held up in front of him to hand to the family. The cat stood up on the vet's hands, jumped 6 feet through the air onto the guy's chest. And the vet said, "It was dying an hour ago." That cat went home and also lived for several years, you know, surrounded by love. And it may add, just to add one mystical one that's in our book, because these were stories sent in, I may add. They're not all from our family, though there are plenty of those from our zoo, is what I called it. But your daughter wants to get you a dog. She goes down to the breeder, picks out a dog, and the breeder says, "I am sorry, but somebody already selected that dog, so I can't sell it to you." And she went home, told the family. And in the ensuing couple of years, she dies. And the parents decided, "Why don't we get a dog to honor her and to like keep a connection with her through the dog. So they go down to the breeder. There are a bunch of dogs running around. One of them runs over, jumps up on the father's chest. And the breeder said, oh, my God, what's the matter? What is it? That's the dog your daughter picked out for you. But another family took it, but they just brought it back because they couldn't manage it anymore. And he runs across the room and jumps up on you. And so, of course, the family took it home. But those are the things I say. There's more to life than most of us appreciate. Mm. And I've had a lot of mystical experiences because of my personal life and all the people I work with. You know, when people aren't afraid to tell you stories, you know, as one woman said to me, I'm a mystic. I mean, she speaks to the dead, okay? And I've learned that she can. Mm. You know, no different than when Amelia said to me, I can talk to animals. But she said, I know you're not a normal doctor now. I can bring you messages. And when you're with parents, especially, of children who've died, they tell you about their things. You know, when you're, again, in a group setting where everybody's safe, say, your son loves butterflies. He studies them. His room is filled with, you know, glass enclosures with, they're dead butterflies, but they're all, you know, there hanging on the walls. And then your son dies. And you go for a walk, and a butterfly follows you through the woods in Connecticut. Mm. So you come home, you go to your son's room, and you look it up. It's a South American butterfly. Mm. What's it doing in Connecticut? Mm. Your daughter loved birds. She's murdered. What happens when her sister has an outdoor wedding? A bird interrupts the wedding with noise, and everybody says, oh, your daughter's here. And while this woman was telling us this story, the window to the room was open, and a bird flew in. There's your daughter. I mean, you know, I've sat in that room like for 20 years. No bird ever even bumped the window. So everybody's reaction. Yeah. And it may add, let me tell you one personal one. A patient of mine went back to the Hawaiian island of Kauai to die there where her mother lived and heal her relationship with her mother before she died. We got there a year and a half later, my wife and I, to do an outdoor workshop. We went into a store to get something that we needed, and there was a butterfly in the store. So we climbed up to rescue it. My wife did, put her hand up. The butterfly came down, landed on her hand, and then we thought, oh, good, we'll take it out of the store and release it. Well, we walk out of the store, and it doesn't want to be released. It sits on my wife's hand, jumps up on her shoulder. I said, well, there's no point, you know, let's go back to the hotel. We get in the car, it goes with us up to our room, spends the evening with us. And the title of a story I wrote that's on my website is, You Can't Sleep with a Butterfly. Because I said that to my wife. I said, honey, you've got to get rid of this. You can't sleep with a butterfly. So she said, okay, and she went out on the porch to our room and brushed it off her shoulder. And she came in and said, okay, I brushed it off. I said, look at your other shoulder. It came back in on her other shoulder. And I've got photographs of this, you know, all over our house. It was just incredible. And I said to the butterfly, finally I just felt, hey, this has got to be the woman I knew who came here to die. I said, look, I'm doing a workshop tomorrow. I'll take you with me. I'll put you in a bag and talk to people about the symbol of butterfly being a symbol of transformation. Then I'll open the bag and let you fly out. Okay. Butterfly goes into the bag. I shut it up. We drive over to the workshop. I get up at the platform, the podium. I open the bag and let it fly out and talk about the butterfly. And it's a symbol of transformation and healing. Solzhenitsyn used that term, a rainbow-colored butterfly. Get your life in order, transform, look what can happen. Then there's self-induced healing.
Wow.
I give this long discussion. But the butterfly stayed over our heads from 9 to 5. It never stopped flying over the outdoor workshop. And when we were done and I announced it, then it flew up and away. But I tell you, when those things happen in your life, you know that life is a mystery, you know.
Yes.
Even
much more magical.
Einstein, that it's either all a miracle or nothing's a miracle. And I can tell you it's all miraculous.
So we have just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, Bernino, in your press release they define you as a high-spirited octogenarian. Mm. What's happening for you right now? What's your passion in life? Where are you? Because you're eternal. You're an eternal being, and you're filled with that life.
It's really I hope to write my autobiography, and the reason is not about me, but about my experiences. You know, what has transformed me? And they have been things like people saying to me, I need to know how to live between office visits. I mean, that when you help people live, they don't die when they're supposed to. I had a near-death experience when I was 4 years old and thought it was a common thing that everybody knew about. So I didn't discuss it or write a book, you know, as has happened more recently, as it's a subject people talk about. I wanted to be dead. I choked on a toy I took apart and put in my mouth to imitate some carpenters who were working in our house. And they had nails in their mouth, I noticed. So I put these things in. It was choking. And it was beautiful to leave your body and not be in pain and not struggling. And the first words out of my mouth when I didn't die were, who did that? And it gave me a sense of a God. In other words, that somebody else is in charge of the schedule, if you know what I mean. Not me personally. When a friend said to me, why are you living this life? I had a past life experience. And again, why that story about rags touched me was that I saw myself killing with a sword because I didn't have faith in my Lord, the man who was telling me what to do. If I said, if I don't kill, he said, then I'll kill you. So I went and killed. And that included a young woman and her dog. And I think it's, again, why all these stories about that night had me crying. I mean, our kids are looking at me like, I'm nuts. Why are you crying? It's a story. But
and
Bernie, all touched me. I can hear the music, yes.
I know. We have to go, unfortunately. You have been such a delight, such an inspiration, as always. Thank you so much
Thank you.
Spending time with us today. And all the best.
Thank you. I always say we'll all run out of time, so enjoy your lifetime.
And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.